I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 10th, and we have a lot to talk about. It's also MS Awareness Week, and a special MS Awareness Week bonus episode of Real Talk MS is going to drop this Thursday, so I hope you'll look for it. And if you happen to have the Real Talk MS app installed on your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet, that bonus episode will automatically be downloaded and waiting for you on Thursday morning. I'm back from the National MS Society's Public Policy Conference in Washington, D.C., and the only way that I can sum it up was that it was a special few days for me. When you're together with about 300 other MS activists, you can't help but feel inspired. And having the opportunity to meet with our elected representatives in Congress to talk about the issues that impact the 1 million families across the United States who are affected by MS is both a privilege and a responsibility that I take seriously. I know that together, our voices are stronger. And last Wednesday, hundreds of conversations were taking place in hundreds of congressional offices. We were talking about ensuring that everyone has access to MS medications, about funding MS research priorities, ending surprise hospital billing, and making sure that natural disaster preparedness includes preparing for people with disabilities who may be caught in fires, floods, earthquakes, and tornadoes. These were conversations designed to remind our lawmakers that their legislation directly impacts the families that they represent. And these conversations also serve to remind our lawmakers that MS activists and families affected by MS vote. I also want to take a minute to thank everyone who's sent a card or an email or made a donation to Walk MS in honor of my wife, Jean. If you missed the podcast a couple of weeks ago, after battling progressive MS for more than 20 years, Jean passed away on February 19th. Having said that, I want to explain a couple of things because from the outside looking in, some of you may be wondering why I would decide to travel to the ACTRIMS Forum in West Palm Beach and then the Public Policy Conference in Washington, D.C. right after my wife's passing. I guess the best way for me to explain my decision is to say that following the loss of a loved one, you want to be with family. And whether you know it or not, you guys have become my family, or at the very least, my tribe. I could have elected to sit home alone or to be part of these conferences that were filled with so many special people who went out of their way to spend time with me, to talk with me, share a meal, or just sit with me and offer their support. I couldn't have been in a better place or with better company. And for sure, I wouldn't have received nearly as many hugs if I had elected to stay home. So the best decision for me was to go to places that were full of familiar faces and to stay busy. Because I guess my takeaway from Jean's passing is that I've doubled down in my commitment to find ways to help other families who are affected by MS avoid the things that Jean and I experienced. And I also want to remind you that while I'll probably circle back and talk about Jean's passing in future podcast episodes, it's important to remember that Jean was among a small percentage of people living with MS who see the disease progress like hers did. The last thing I want to do is scare anyone or make anyone think that Jean's MS journey is going to be their MS journey. At the same time, I know firsthand that progressive MS can be relentless. That's one of the reasons that the work of the International Progressive MS Alliance is so important to me, because the Alliance is focused on improving and eventually eliminating the very, very worst aspects of multiple sclerosis. If you'd like to make a donation in Jean's memory to Walk MS, I hope you visit realtalkms.com/walkms. That's realtalkms.com/walkms, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. Lately, it feels like it's hard to talk to anyone about anything without talking about the coronavirus. And because the CDC has announced that people with weakened immune systems may be particularly vulnerable to this virus, people affected by MS can feel as though they have even more reason to worry. But in sifting through all the news that's available about the coronavirus, it's so important to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff. That's why my guest today is Dr. Abby Hughes. Dr. Hughes is a clinical psychologist at Johns Hopkins University who specializes in the assessment, treatment, and management of psychological and cognitive difficulties associated with multiple sclerosis. And we're going to talk with Dr. Hughes about how people affected by MS should be thinking about the coronavirus and what they should and shouldn't be doing about it. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Abby Hughes, there are a few other things that you should know about. Last week, Canada became the latest country to approve Mayzent for treating active secondary progressive MS. Mayzent is the first oral disease-modifying therapy to be approved for treating active secondary progressive MS. It's been shown to slow disability progression, reduce annualized relapse rates, reduce inflammatory disease activity, and limit new brain lesions. Mayzent is already approved for treating active secondary progressive MS in Europe, Australia, and the United States, and has also been approved for treating relapsing remitting MS in the U.S. Also last week, pharmaceutical company Janssen, a division of Johnson & Johnson, submitted an application to the European Medicines Agency seeking approval for ponesimod, an oral treatment for relapsing remitting MS. Ponesimod works by limiting the damage to the nervous system that immune cells can cause in MS, in the same way that Gilenya and Mayzent work. Ponesimod was compared to Aubagio in a phase 3 clinical trial involving more than 1,100 people with relapsing remitting or active secondary progressive MS, and the results of that trial showed that, compared to Aubagio, ponesimod significantly reduced annual relapse rates, significantly reduced the number of new active inflammatory brain lesions, and reduced reported MS fatigue. Over the next few weeks, I think we can look forward to hearing more announcements about new disease-modifying therapies. In visiting Capitol Hill, as you walk between the buildings that house the offices of the senators and the members of the House of Representatives, you can't help but walk past the U.S. Supreme Court. And as I walked by the court last week, I was reminded that this fall, the Supreme Court is going to take up the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, which means that the legal protections for people with pre-existing medical conditions, the ability for people living with MS or any other chronic illness to access affordable health care will also be decided. As you can imagine, we've been following this case closely as it's wound its way through the courts. And here's the short version of how it ended up in the laps of the seven justices of the Supreme Court. First, you have to remember that when the Affordable Care Act was passed into law, it included an individual mandate or a requirement that every American buy health insurance or pay a penalty on their income tax. And in 2012, the Supreme Court ruled that the Affordable Care Act was constitutional because it was a legitimate exercise of Congress's taxing authority. Now, in 2017, the Republican majority in Congress changed that tax penalty and reduced it to zero. And before you send me that email saying that I'm getting too political when I say things like the Republican majority in Congress, I just want to point out that every single Republican representative and exactly three Democrats in the House voted to change the individual mandate income tax penalty to zero, so I think I'm being factually accurate here. So without any tax penalty in place, a group of Republican attorneys general filed suit in Texas, claiming that without the taxing provision in place, the balance of the Affordable Care Act was now unconstitutional. And the federal judge hearing the case agreed, saying that because the tax was eliminated, Well, the ACA could no longer be considered a use of Congress's taxing power. This past December, the Fifth U.S. Court of Appeals upheld that judge's ruling, but then sent the case back to the trial judge in Texas, asking him to analyze the balance of the Affordable Care Act to see whether it might still be constitutional even without the individual mandate. In January of this year, the U.S. House of Representatives, a group of Democrat attorneys general representing several states, along with more than 20 patient advocacy organizations, including the National MS Society, requested that the Supreme Court take up the case in its current term and issue an expedited decision rather than leave millions of people with pre-existing conditions wondering if or when they would still have access to their health care. Well, the Supreme Court turned down the request for an expedited ruling and chose to follow their normal procedures. So now the case won't be going back to the trial judge in Texas for his analysis. Instead, the Supreme Court will hear the case in their next term, beginning in October, and they'll issue their decision after the November election. We can expect to get that Supreme Court decision by June of 2021. If you're affected by MS or any other chronic condition, and you're living in the United States, I'm not sure that there's an issue that will impact you more profoundly than this upcoming Supreme Court decision. I'm glad that we have so much encouraging news to talk about when it comes to MS disease-modifying therapies and other breakthrough research, but none of that matters if you don't have access to healthcare. Even with the Affordable Care Act in place, medical debt is still the number one cause of personal bankruptcy in America. As a nation, as a society, we can't afford to go backwards and return to the days when getting a diagnosis of MS was almost a sure ticket to financial ruin for families. There isn't likely to be much more news around this case now that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear it in the fall. But as someone whose family has faced complete financial devastation due to medical-related expense, I don't think it's ever not the right time to talk about what this means and what's at stake here for millions of families across the United States. No matter where in the world you might live, the coronavirus is on everyone's mind. And people who are living with MS may be especially concerned about how the coronavirus might affect them. But the effect that it's already having is that it's worrying everyone. And when that worry begins to feel overwhelming, it's important to regain your emotional balance. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dr. Abby Hughes, and we're talking about some of the things you should be thinking about when it comes to the coronavirus. I've always believed that one of the most challenging aspects of living with MS is learning to live with uncertainty. No one ever knows if or when they might experience an exacerbation. No one can predict if or when they might wake up to a new symptom. And no one has a way of knowing if or when an existing MS symptom that seems kind of minor might become something more major. Living with MS is living with uncertainty, and processing uncertainty can cause distress. And that can create its own cascade of anxiety-driven symptoms. Now, as the world reacts to the spread of the coronavirus, one of the things that we've already learned is that someone with a compromised or weakened immune system can be more seriously affected by the virus. So whether someone living with MS will be diagnosed with the coronavirus and whether that person's case is mild or not is a new type of uncertainty that people living with MS are dealing with. My guest today is Dr. Abby Hughes. Dr. Hughes is a clinical psychologist at Johns Hopkins University who specializes in the assessment, treatment, and management of psychological and cognitive difficulties associated with multiple sclerosis. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Hughes.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, even though the CDC has assessed the immediate health risk from the coronavirus as low, we've seen people frequently reacting to their fears rather than to the facts. So if someone is living with multiple sclerosis, what should they be thinking about when it comes to the coronavirus?
Sure. Sure. That's a great question. And thank you so much for the introduction of the issue of uncertainty and how much this affects people with MS and the people who support them, including their family members, their friends, their healthcare providers, their caregivers. This is really something that is affecting everyone. And so I'd like to start by just providing an introduction that with the outbreak of coronavirus, many people, not just people with MS, are having increased feelings of worry, nervousness, restlessness, and uncertainty. These are completely normal reactions to a situation that is continuing to evolve. There are a lot of unknowns. There are a lot of questions that come up. People with MS are no exception to this, and for several reasons, people with MS are more likely to be feeling greater levels of anxiety and distress. I want to discuss a little bit about why this is so that people with MS and their support partners have a better understanding. So first, MS is a chronic and unpredictable disease. It brings about a wide range of physical, cognitive, and emotional symptoms. And so when a person with MS experiences a new or worsening symptoms, one of their first questions they often ask is this my MS or something else? And now with the introduction of coronavirus, that something else is something that is clearly very much on the forefront of people's minds. And even for people who've had relatively stable MS, so for example, no recent exacerbations or MRI changes, there's often worry about how long that period of stability will last. Again, with the introduction of coronavirus, that adds a lot of additional uncertainty. People are often asked to be aware of their symptoms. They're told to be vigilant of their symptoms. And again, for people living with the disease, they're already aware and vigilant of their symptoms. So to increase that actually may put people at greater risk for anxiety and distress. A second thing to keep in mind is that many people with MS are on medications that suppress the body's natural immune system. And this is because MS is an autoimmune disease that attacks the brain and spinal cord. The medications that are most helpful for treating MS for many individuals suppress the immune system in order to protect the nervous system. So many neurologists try to have really thoughtful and informed discussions with patients about the relative benefits and risks of these medications. And there's really intensive protocols in place to monitor patients for the more dangerous side effects. That being said, when someone with MS is experiencing coughing, sneezing, or general cold or flu-like symptoms, there's greater uncertainty about whether the symptoms are a seasonal bug versus something more serious. And again, coronavirus has muddied these waters. So I provide all this background in the context of validating that if someone's experiencing anxiety or you have a loved one with MS who's having distress about this, it's a very normal reaction. It's important to know that if you are experiencing greater anxiety, you're not alone. And there may be some tips and strategies to help you manage that distress. Also, a note about our support partners. So again, these are family members, friends, or caregivers who may be supporting people with MS. You may also be experiencing greater anxiety about this, both for yourself, you know, you want to keep yourself healthy so that you can provide the support needed, and you're worried about your loved one. So this is not just exclusively to people with MS, but also anyone affected by MS.
Maybe you can talk a little bit with us about what sort of coping skills or mechanisms people can either learn or deploy to deal with some of that stress that they might be feeling.
Sure. So if you've been looking at this up on the internet or through your newsfeed or social media, some of these tips are probably going to be redundant, but it's worth saying again that for people with MS, you are already doing a fairly great job managing anxiety and distress as it is. You're already coping with the uncertainty of living with MS. And so you likely already have the skills in your purview to react now with this increased threat in the same way. So reminding yourself you do have these skills, and especially deploying these skills now is important. But I'll go through a couple of these strategies. One, having a strategic information gathering plan is really key. So maybe 1 to 3 times a day, and probably not more often, go to a reliable, trusted source of information. The CDC website is a great one. And most medical centers and organizations like the National MS Society have their pulse on this situation. So anything that is coming out of the CDC is likely to be communicated through these websites and through these outlets. Checking these sources more than 2 or 3 times a day can probably increase feelings of distress. It can lead to feeling obsessive, and it can take people away from enjoying activities with their loved ones or other activities throughout the day that give them a sense of purpose and feel like they can kind of cope with some of the challenges that are happening. So you may consider going to those, you know, two or three trusted sources, and also to your healthcare provider, who is also, I can promise you, on our end of the healthcare provider realm, we are also searching out information so that we can provide patients with updated, valid information. I also want to caution people to limit exposure to people or media that is going to reinforce panic or what might be considered fear-mongering. Unfortunately, social media is an incredibly useful tool, but it can also be harmful if one is searching, for example, through the comment sections of a lot of these news reports. These are not validated sources of news, and it can really increase anxiety. So sticking to those primary sources can be a really great strategy. You can also take reasonable precautions and exercise planning strategies. So, for example, if you think that you may not be able to go grocery shopping next week, or if the recommendations change such that people are recommended to not leave the home, stocking up on a reasonable amount of non-perishables. We're not talking about going to Costco and, you know, spending your life savings on an apocalyptic plan, but having some reasonable things to get through the next several days. Keep in mind that things like planning and organization can be challenging for people with MS, particularly if people have advanced cognitive symptoms. So if this may be difficulty with planning or organizing, they may have a support person in their life who helps them manage that organization. So this is also the time to use that support system to help with the planning and organization, particularly as it comes to planning for prescriptions, planning for food, planning other daily activities, including things like childcare, and coming up with those backup plans. You may also want to talk to your doctor about any changes in medication. With what I said before about people with MS having a compromised immune system, there has been some panic or some significant concern, even if not panic, about these immunosuppressive medications. Now, it is really important to not make any changes in medication without talking to your doctor. The reason being that going off of a disease-modifying therapy or adjusting one's dose can have significant negative effects that actually may increase risk for infection and can also increase risk for anxiety. There are some significant rebound effects that can come off of going when one goes off of things like antidepressant or anti-anxiety medications, and that rebound effect can be worse than even some of the worst symptoms of anxiety that people already experienced. So I want to clarify, while I'm a psychologist and I do not make recommendations about what people what types of medications someone should take, I do want to recommend that talking to your prescriber, talking to your physician about those medications and any changes you may want to ask about before actually making the changes. Another tip would be about your social activity. So we're seeing all kinds of mixed messages about whether to, you know, keep calm and carry on versus to avoid large social gatherings. And honestly, this is a tricky one. There's not a current one-size-fits-all recommendation for each person, and that also feeds into a lot of anxiety and uncertainty. One thing I want to emphasize is don't give up all of your social activities. Don't stop going to, you know, particularly small group types of meetings or other small opportunities for interaction with loved ones. Having social support, especially during times of uncertainty, is really key. It helps you talk to others and get validation from the anxiety and the distress that you're experiencing. And we know that social connection is such a huge component of preventing and treating depression and anxiety. As a standalone, it can be one of the most important aspects of treatment of these conditions. So isolating for long periods of time can actually make these symptoms worse as well. Unfortunately, we live in a day and age where we have access to so much technology for connecting with others. We have multiple video conferencing apps, and I can name a few. I have no endorsements with any of these companies, but things like Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, WhatsApp, Viber, these are all Wi-Fi-based connections that even if you don't have a cellular data plan, if you have a Wi-Fi connection, you can have video connections with individuals and groups of people. And I would imagine that there are probably numerous support groups that are now operating using these types of video conferencing platforms. And if they are not already, they are definitely now considering it, particularly given the outbreak of coronavirus. Another backup plan or another thing that you can ask about is asking your providers if they offer any telehealth services. Now, every state has a long list of laws about whether telehealth services can be allowed and under what circumstances. But in emergency plans, and particularly now, there are efforts to increase the scope of telemedicine services. So even having a brief telephone check-in with your provider could be a really helpful way of answering some of your acute questions without having to come into a major medical center for a follow-up care plan. Now, your provider may not be able to prescribe over the phone. They may not be able to have a very long discussion with you, but having a 10-minute discussion, again, could be helpful in creating a plan for your future care.
You know, a moment ago, you mentioned attending social gatherings. What about going to work? Is this a time where if someone is living with MS, should this person contact their employer and ask whether they can be working from home, or should they just continue going into the office or their workplace until their employer or public health officials indicate otherwise?
Sure, that's a great question, and I'm so glad you bring it up because it brings up an issue that is really important to discuss in the context of MS, and that is disclosure of MS. There are so many people living out there and working full-time who have not disclosed their MS to an employer, and they may not disclose that for any number of reasons. It's an incredible personal decision. And in this state of feelings of crisis or feelings of this outbreak, people may feel compelled to then disclose that, and it may not have been the way that they wanted to disclose, and I think that's important to acknowledge. But if your company or if your workplace setting allows for things like telecommuting, you can start by just asking what the opportunities are for telecommuting. Again, everyone, not just people with MS, are experiencing the fear and uncertainty, and there's a goal of containment of the virus. So even without having to disclose MS, you can still explore opportunities for things like telecommuting. I know I work with several patients who telecommute multiple times a week already. So the infrastructure is in place to often allow for that. Now, for positions where in-person attendance is necessary, and let's say, for example, someone works in an environment where infection is more prone, like in a large healthcare system, that may be something more in line with a conversation with your a trusted supervisor and potentially with occupational health or human resources in terms of accommodations. So telecommuting would be a reasonable accommodation for someone with MS who not only may have things like mobility or transportation concerns, but is often at more increased risk compared to other employees. And employers have responsibilities in terms of providing reasonable accommodations. And oftentimes telecommuting does fall in the reasonable accommodation list. Again, depending on the position and the duties of the position. And again, I get back to that decision of disclosure versus not. And if you work in an environment where you feel trusted and supported, now could be that opportunity for disclosure. But you can also try to proceed with requesting this option without even mentioning MS, if that's your preference. There's a couple additional resources that I would certainly point people to. There's a whole study involved in the realm of uncertainty in MS. And there was a pilot study that was conducted out at University of Washington by Dr. Ivan Moulton and colleagues. And the intervention specifically looked to target tolerance for uncertainty in MS, and particularly people with early MS. Again, Ivan Moulton was the primary investigator. And I would be happy to provide more information about the study if interested. But the idea being that there are certain psychotherapeutic tools and strategies that if people want to see a mental health provider, including a psychologist, they can work on skills to better manage this uncertainty, particularly in the context that we're in currently. So that is definitely a valuable resource. Other types, the types of therapies that people may consider include cognitive behavioral therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, and there's also a type of therapy called dialectical behavior therapy. And each of these therapies are very, very well researched, particularly for people with high levels of anxiety and distress or difficulty managing emotional distress. And so whether you are currently in therapy or considering therapy, that is also a highly recommended resource that you can explore. And there are therapists that do telemedicine sessions.
Well, Dr. Abby Hughes, thank you for sharing some of the things people living with MS should keep in mind as they react to news about the coronavirus and plan their own strategies for best coping with it. And thanks for talking with me today.
You're so welcome. Thank you again for having me on.
As Dr. Hughes just said, many disease-modifying therapies work by suppressing the immune system. People with MS who are being treated with these therapies can face an increased risk of infections of all kinds, including the coronavirus. So you want to keep these things in mind. First, if you're taking a disease-modifying therapy and have concerns about your risk for contracting the coronavirus, don't stop your disease-modifying therapy or any MS symptom treatment without first speaking with your neurologist. If you've been in close contact with a person who has a coronavirus or believe you've somehow been exposed to the coronavirus, or a health official confirms that you have the coronavirus, stay home and contact your neurologist and primary care doctors right away and get their advice. And you also want to call your neurologist and primary care doctor if you've recently traveled from an area with widespread or ongoing community spread of the coronavirus. Remember that most people who contract the coronavirus will have mild symptoms, but some people are going to experience more severe symptoms. And those symptoms can include fever, coughing, and shortness of breath. Don't forget that there are simple preventive actions that everyone can take to limit the spread of the virus. You've heard them before, but they bear repeating. Washing your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds, or using an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol if soap and water aren't available. Avoiding close contact with people who are sick. That means staying at least 3 feet away. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth with unwashed hands. Covering your cough or sneeze with a flexed elbow or tissue, then throwing the tissue in the trash. Cleaning and disinfecting frequently touched objects and surfaces. And staying home and contacting your neurologist and primary care doctor if you develop symptoms, if you've been in close contact with a person known to have the coronavirus, or if you've recently traveled from an area with widespread or ongoing community spread of the coronavirus. Finally, the National MS Society has published a list of what you need to know about the coronavirus. It's up on their website, and I'll include a link to that page in today's show notes. And that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And if you have a friend or family member who might also enjoy listening to the podcast, you can share this episode with them by suggesting they point their web browser at realtalkms.com/132. You'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into your email or text. And I hope you'll take just a minute to visit realtalkms.com/walkms and make a donation toward Walk MS today. The MS Society is the largest private funder of MS research in the world, and I think supporting their efforts just makes a lot of sense. This year, I'm walking to honor the memory of my wife, Jean, so I'm inviting you to help. Just visit realtalkms.com/walkms, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.